All right, Jay-Z is here. I'm anxious to speak to him. I've been reading his book. Guy's got a fascinating life. There he is, the famous Jay-Z.
Hey.
All right. I've been reading your book. How are you?
I'm great, thank you.
Well, when's the last time I saw you?
You got the Janet Jackson mic.
What do you mean? Oh, yeah. You look like Janet now.
Yeah.
How are you been?
What's up? What's happening?
Well, you know, you're happening. I was reading your book. I said, first of all, it's a good-looking book. It's like a piece of art. I have it sitting out like a coffee table book in a way. And brought it home. Is that a Andy Warhol picture on the front?
Rorschach, yeah.
Yeah, Rorschach.
Yeah.
And you made it like an art book. Someone said to me, gee, you know, the Jay-Z book is kind of an expensive book. I go, yeah, it's an art book. If you read it, there's a lot of beautiful pictures and things. I imagine you took a long time on this thing.
Yeah, I collect art. I got into art recently about 5 years ago or so. And I just, you know.
Have you bought a Warhol?
Yeah, I got a couple, yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah, because how do you get that picture for your cover? Don't you have to get some kind of a licensing thing going on?
Yeah, we called the Andy Warhol estate. They cleared it in one day, which was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I was very happy about that. I actually have one of those Rorschachs over my fireplace in my living room.
Talk to me about that for a second. When you start to make real money, and I got a million questions for you about this, but all of a sudden you decide to get into the art world. And you yourself say in your book you're a hustler. Don't you feel like you could be getting hustled in the sense that, I don't know anything about this art. I didn't grow up in this environment.
Why does it cost so much?
Scares the shit out of me that someone's going to rip me off because I don't know that. I don't know what you paid for your Warhol, but I imagine it was pricey.
Well, that's life. You know, you feel that way with anything that you come across as an adult, whether it be someone's music. You know, or someone's art. It's all about art. If you like it, I try to buy things that resonate with me. So,
where do you go to buy art? I mean, how do you know what to buy?
And does it have to be somebody with a name, or can you just look at something like that?
No, I have everything from Andy Warhol to Tim Noble and Sue Simmons, like who are fairly new. It's just pretty much things that I like. I have an Ed Ruscha. Ed Ruscha is a very famous artist as well. But it's just a picture and it says Annie. Uh-huh. And for me, you know, I made Hard Knock Life. Annie's my sister's name as well, and which made me look at the movie Annie growing up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it meant something to me. When I look at that, I think of the song that I made. You know, David Hammond's has it's just this huge painting with bricks on the bottom. It reminds me of the projects where I come from. So it's just things that resonate with me, whether it makes a ton of money or not.
You know what's funny to me, too? When I'm thinking about it, you say you went to the Andy Warhol estate and you got the cover art for the book in one day. Hard Knock Life, with getting the clearance for the Annie song, you had to hustle them because they wouldn't clear your usage of Annie.
Right.
So you wrote them a letter saying how when you were in high school, I think, you wrote a paper about Annie and that Annie really means something to you and this and that and
they
the other thing.
I did read the book, man. Thank you.
You're goddamn right I read the book. Yeah. I mean, you sat there and said, wow, I gotta work this situation.
Those old instincts clicked back in. You know, I knew it was a major, important song for me. And for, you know, a lot of people that come from where I came from. So, yeah.
Marcy Projects.
Yeah, I painted a couple little lies for the truth, and it worked out great. Yeah.
There's one story in your book that, it's funny how I read a book. I kind of flip around. Your book's easy to do that with. I can just flip around. I went to the epilogue, you call it. At the end, you talk about meeting Oprah Winfrey. And I just figured this was going to be a case of you and Oprah Winfrey hitting it off, and she's in love with you and the whole thing. But it was just the opposite. She totally didn't get you, and it was rather uncomfortable. She didn't understand where you're coming from. You don't put her down for it.
Right.
But, like, I'm sure the song 99 Bitches, she thinks is about a woman, when in fact...
99 Problems.
Well, yeah, 99 Problems and a Bitch Ain't One. She probably thinks bitches mean women. She probably thinks that the whole use of the N-word, you point out, she's not down with that. She can't get it. Doesn't make her feel comfortable.
In fact, Oprah just banned bitch from her network.
Right. When you go into a situation like that, is it the most uncomfortable thing in the world for you? Are you nervous?
Nah, it's actually comfortable for me because I know the things and the emotions that I stand on are true, and I can have that conversation with anybody. And Oprah's out, you know, one of our heroes, you know, for her to understand, it meant a lot to me. But no, I wasn't nervous. I knew, like, we come up in different eras, so the N word to her has different meaning. You know, it's like it's so close to the civil rights movement and. You know, the last word people heard as they were being hung from a tree. But, you know, in our for our generation, you know, we took that word and turned it into a term of endearment because words are, you know, people give words power. If we take words off a network, and that's her choice. If we take words off a network or we take words off the table, the words are just changed, not the attitude. We have to change the attitude and not the words.
You explained sort of the whole hip-hop rap thing to me because you made a couple of points, but one of them was, and this really resonated with me, you say in the book, Michael Jackson's Thriller is the best album ever made. I disagree with that. I don't get Michael Jackson. He wasn't from, like, to me, Sgt. Pepper's was the greatest thing. And having grown up in a black neighborhood, everyone
loved it. Sgt. Pepper's like top five.
Yeah, top five, right?
Yeah, it's incredible.
But I imagine for a kid growing up where you grew up, Thriller is the record. But you said, as a black man, I couldn't relate to Michael Jackson. I couldn't relate to all these Jerry Curl guys like Prince. Prince is a genius, and you could mark off that Michael Jackson and Prince, you could put up with them because they're such geniuses. Okay, they're eccentric. But when rap hit, it was guys who looked like you, guys you could relate to. Almost sent a chill up my spine in a way because it's true. Everybody else was a freak. You can't relate to Michael Jackson and Prince, even though they're musical geniuses. So everything started to change for you. You started to think, well, man, maybe I could do this. Maybe I could make poems. Maybe I could rap. And what was really...
It brought an incredible talent closer to home. It resonated closer to me. Like, yeah, because Michael Jackson and Prince, they were so far removed from who we were every day. And the music they were making was so difficult to make that rap brought it closer for us to tell these stories and have these emotions and speak these emotions and... It brought it into a real way.
Yeah.
You know, like, we were telling stories of things that happened yesterday.
Right.
You know, it became news. It became instant. It became things that were happening, you know, real time.
It's the way you got your news, in a sense.
Yeah.
I was shocked, though. You were a little boy. You would go around writing poems in this, like, little, like, you almost say a chicken scroll at the sides of pages all over the place. You would write these little notes to yourself, little poems, rhymes and things, and your friends would steal them from you. They would steal your rhymes. That's such a betrayal. But you don't seem all that pissed off about it in the book.
They just really wanted to go to school and get some girls. It wasn't so deep.
I mean, people recognized that you were a great rapper when you were a little kid. They didn't call it rap even at that point. They just understood your poems were strong.
People understood before I really understood. Like my cousin especially, you know, he wouldn't speak to me for years. Me and my cousin didn't speak for 3-4 years. Because he thought I was wasting my talent when I was on the street hustling and not pursuing my dreams every day, actively every day. I was pursuing them in my mind, and I was still writing, you know. But for me, life was happening now. I needed to move now, and I couldn't wait for rap.
Yeah, you've had a weird life. Here's why I think your life is weird. You're the type of guy who had this talent and all this, but at the same point, you were like this crack dealer and hustler. And the reason it's so weird is when you're that artistic and you got so many things going on inside of you, you could have lit a landmine in your life and just gone to jail for a really long time.
Absolutely.
I mean, you weren't screwing around. Or got killed.
Yeah.
You shot your brother in the shoulder, I believe, point blank pretty much, didn't you? Because he was fucking around with you.
Yeah.
You're an angry guy.
Yeah.
Do you think your anger comes from your father leaving you?
Of course.
Yeah. It's got to be,
it was
right?
Around the time. You know, I was around 12. My pop left about 11. Anywhere between those years of foggy, anywhere between 9 and 11, my pop left. I had a bunch of anger.
Did you have a close relationship with him up until that point?
Yeah, the closest.
When you're growing up in your household, your mother and father seem like they're getting along okay, or are they fighting all the time?
Well, our house was the party house, so we had a huge record collection. They had, you know, it was little hints. My mom and pop had their names on their own records. You know, they could share kids, but they didn't share records. Like, it was, which is weird looking back on it. But You know, we had a ton of records, Reel to Reel, which is, you
the
know, especially
thing,
in,
yeah.
Yeah, especially in Marcy was a very rare thing.
Was your dad a musician?
No, he sang a little bit at church.
Right.
And, it just was in the music really heavy. So to answer your question was, our house was filled with joy. People would come over all the time. Our house was always crowded, and we had the fun house. So, you know, up until that point, you know, I didn't really suspect anything. I thought it would be like that for the rest of my life.
Your dad was working, your mom was working. Were people home with you during the day, or were you pretty much on your own?
Yeah, pretty much on my own. Yeah.
Think you were angry about that?
I didn't realize it, but looking back on it, I probably was a little angry about it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I mean, when you're left alone all the time and you're like, where is everyone? I mean, you have brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
How many did you have?
I'm the youngest. I had two sisters and one brother.
Yeah, but even when you have that and your parents aren't home, there's got to be some anger brewing. And even though it's the party house and it seems like it's filled with a lot of love, you got to be saying to yourself, where the hell's the love for me? Where is everybody?
Right.
I mean, you understand now as an adult they had to work and do their thing, but it probably seemed to you like you were being ignored.
Right.
Yeah. And so then all of a sudden at 12, your dad just comes in and announces he's leaving?
Well, he didn't announce it. Because I found out what really happened. His brother had gotten killed. And it,
what were the circumstances of that?
Life in, urban areas.
He was shot in a violent way?
Got stabbed, actually.
Stabbed in a fight?
Yeah.
Wow.
And it really sent him into a spiral. And then he would go out and look for the guy. And
were you scared out of your mind? Your dad was going
out? I didn't know.
You didn't know.
And my mom would tell him, you know, you have a family here. You can't go out there and do something to somebody or get something done to you. Then what about your son? Yada, yada, yada. And he couldn't deal with that sort of, that pain. And it was like, you know, almost a split. It was between his brother and his family.
Right.
You know, which was his blood as well. So it was like really traumatizing to him, and he never was the same after that.
So
I didn't know this growing up.
Right, you just didn't know what was going on.
So I just know he left.
He left, and did he have any? Was he a visiting dad, or he just gone? He was gone.
No, he's gone. Yeah,
gone.
Yeah.
Oh my God! Does your mother spend every day crying? I mean, my husband's gone.
My mother's.
She's strong.
Oh yeah, super strong. Yeah.
But she had to be. I mean, was she?
I'm sure she cried behind closed doors.
Was she? But I know your dad was like he was still. Was he still close by in a sense? Like was he living in Brooklyn?
You're about 15 minutes away in some of the projects.
Isn't that nuts?
Yeah.
But you had no idea.
Well, I knew. Yeah.
But didn't he want to? I mean, did you ever say? I know you're reconciled with your dad at some point. But this was how many years ago did you reconcile? This is before the death of your father, right?
Yeah, yeah.
When you reconcile with him. This is after you're famous and everything?
Yeah.
Is that bittersweet because now you're this big, rich, successful guy?
No, because it was, you know, it was like black album time. So I had dropped about 7 albums. It wasn't like he saw me make a little bit of money and ran to the money. It wasn't that. It was he was still who he was.
He put it out there that he wanted to reconcile with you.
My mom actually made it happen. Thank you.
That's pretty big of your mother to make it happen.
Yeah, I tell you, she's super strong. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, aren't you... kind of freaked out by that your mother was strong enough to say go have a relationship even though it's, you know, too late to go
yeah,
to see
the
father?
First meeting he didn't show up and I knew he wouldn't, and I told her, I was like, he's not going to show up, you know, because we've had that happen, you know.
You set up a meeting with him and he just doesn't come.
Yeah,
talk about abandonment.
Yeah. So
how do you know he was forgive me for interrupting, but how do you know he's not going to show up ahead of time? How do you know that?
I've been through that. We've seen this movie happen. In my mind, I said, we've seen this movie happen a million times. This is what I'm telling my mom. We've seen this movie before, but okay. We set up the first meeting. He doesn't come.
Is that emasculating for you? Does that just cut your manhood off? Because it's almost like, you know how the man treats the woman bad? Now he's treating his son like the woman.
I
ain't gonna show up.
I pretty much had built up a wall to that that sort of emotion,
right?
Which was not healthy, but you know, I built up a wall to it.
Yeah, but by the same token, it sort of shows you, well, the money doesn't mean anything.
No, I didn't. Yeah. No, I didn't. Not to him.
This guy doesn't change for any reason,
which made me respect him.
Yeah,
in an odd way.
Yeah.
So you hadn't seen him all those years. Now you're already, you know, you got hit albums, all that stuff. The reconciliation or the meeting is set up. What do you go into that meeting with? Do you go in with, I'm going to tell him off, or I'm just going to try and understand? Or what do you go into that meeting with?
I went in with a lot of anger, thinking, yes, I'm going to tell him off, and it didn't happen like that.
Well, what happened when he walked in the room? Did he look the way you thought he'd look?
Yeah, he was very, very,
Do you remember him being this big, strong guy, and then all of a sudden walks in a frail old man?
No, he was actually very tall, strong man. Like, I had no idea that he would die like the next month. He was like very tall, looked healthy.
What
strong.
Did he die from?
He had a bad liver from drinking and doing other things to his liver his whole entire life.
Did he know he was sick?
Yeah.
Did he tell you he was sick, or he didn't want to even discuss it with you?
We didn't discuss it. We had so much to discuss that day.
Did your father ever get the guy who killed his brother?
No.
Never caught him?
No. I wouldn't tell you that on this program.
Right. But well, honest, he's gone.
The honest so. Truth is, he's gone. The
yeah, honest truth is. You can't go to jail now.
Yeah, yeah. The honest truth is, no. Yeah.
Wouldn't that be a cool movie? You go to get the guy who killed his brother. Like, you take it on. Like, you know, it just keeps going and going and
I
going.
I mean, you know.
Yeah, who knows?
Maybe he did.
Maybe you did. Maybe you took care of it. You know what? I don't think you would.
No.
You weren't that close with your father. Uh-huh. And yet, you know, isn't it weird how you always still look for your father? It's like a hole in your heart. Right? You can't even, maybe you can't, you couldn't probably go on and be a good married man if you didn't fix the hole in your heart about your father. Am I correct?
I couldn't, absolutely.
Right? You couldn't stay in a marriage if you're sitting there thinking all the time, my father left me, this one left me.
Well, you
no,
don't.
My wife's going
to
leave me.
You don't even get to that point because you don't allow yourself. Because once that's happened to you, like your father growing up, he's like Superman to you.
Yes.
So he's everything.
Right.
So once you feel that sort of hurt, you never allow yourself to get close to that. Feeling you don't even want to feel that good because you know the flip side of that, so you don't let anyone get that close so they won't hurt you.
Have you ever been in therapy?
No.
You seem to be pretty self-realized. Reading in your book, you seem to have a good understanding of the hurt and the pain and everything. You're able to feel it, but don't you think that's something you need to talk to someone about before?
I've spoken to the world about it.
But wait a second, before you become a father yourself and before you know, before you even got married, didn't you want to sit down with someone and say, shit, how much is this going to affect my relationships with everyone? How am I going to stay focused on one woman? How am I going to not get over the fear that someone's going to leave me?
Well, I've been dealing with that my entire life, and I've been dealing with that through my music. So, you know,
you think
and I deal
enough?
With that daily. Yeah. I don't see, you know, I got a million therapists.
You think? You think that's really
yeah.
therapy?
Yes, of course. Of course. Imagine making that sort of listen to these albums. Read those songs. Read the level of like you said, self-realization and all the things that I've been through. All that therapy is in that music.
Do you think you have to be super intelligent to come to that realization on your own without the help of a?
Well, I think you have to want to know about yourself. You don't have to be super intelligent. I consider myself super intelligent. I never graduated from college. I never graduated from high school.
I find it very hard to self-analyze. There are a lot of things in my life I don't want to look at. I need somebody to sit there and push me. That's why I'm in analysis.
You either make albums or go sit with a therapist.
But look what I do for a living. I sit here every day. I'm honest. I'm honest with my audience. I talk about it, but I made a joke out of a lot of things that were serious.
That's a form of therapy.
I guess so. So when you finally get in the room with your dad, all these years of hurt, anger, I mean, look at how you acted out. You did a lot of things to hurt yourself. You went out, you were dealing crack. You could have ended up in jail your whole life. You know, you were in a lot of dangerous situations. You got all this anger. You sit down with him. You're prepared to tell him off. In walks this guy. You don't even know that he's going to die a month later, but you stand there. What do you say to this guy?
Just the whole, my entire life of pain and the things I went through, you know, I got to express them to him and express them in a way that was freeing to me.
What did he say to all this? Did he apologize?
He tried to at first he tried to, you know, he's stubborn. He's a very stubborn man. He tried to hold on to it and said, you know where I was. It was right up the street. And I was like, I was a child.
Yeah, right.
Like, I shouldn't have to go find my father. Like, I'm a child. Like, and then after those words were said to him, then he dealt with it in a real way. And it,
you mean the man says to you,
me to forgive him.
The man says to you, well, you could have come see me. I was right up the block, which is a ridiculous statement.
Yeah, but it was a defense mechanism. It was his own stubbornness kicking in that he was fighting me. He was fighting. He didn't want to let the truth get all the way in because he knew it was painful.
Did you end up hugging him?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Big step. Did you see him again after that, or was that it?
He had passed a month later.
So you never saw him within that month's time?
No.
Wow.
Yeah.
Crazy stuff. Yeah.
Did he, like, reach out, or was his death even a surprise to him? Did he die suddenly, or was
He knew he was sick, and he chose to still drink and smoke.
Oh.
He went out his way. How old was he when he died?
Oh, man. fairly young man, about 54.
Wow.
55.
Growing up all those years, have you ever seen your birthday card ever reach out to you whatsoever?
No, not that I could remember.
Did no ever, Christmas, nothing.
Did he ever?
No,
did,
no.
Did he get remarried and send and start up a whole other family?
No.
None of that?
Mm-mm.
Strange guy. Was he a war hero or was he in the...
No.
He was nothing like that.
Mm-mm.
Just a guy who went off. Yeah. And the brother thing just kind of freaked him out.
Yeah.
Do you sometimes think you have trouble figuring out what it is to be a man? Because I always hear that, you know, like people are always saying, you know, black guys who grow up without a dad don't have a father figure and they don't know how to be men. How are you coping with that?
No, they say that you know, a woman can't raise a man like in that way. But, you know, I've been through so many things. Even when as a young man, I was pretty much on my own and pretty much, you know, providing for my family in some form of way.
Mm-hmm.
Are you supporting your family now? Are you supporting your mom and everyone else?
Of course.
You resent that?
No.
You're happy you can do it?
Of course.
What about when you have, do your brothers and sisters ever, like, say, come on, man, Jay-Z, give me some money. Come on, for crying out loud. I need money.
No, my sister, I have a great support system. How do you say that?
Immediate family?
Immediate family. Yeah. You know, they're very supportive and protective of me. I'm the youngest brother, so it's still that sort of relationship. My sisters, forget about it. They're pit bulls.
You don't get a lot of family members hitting you up for money now that you're a success?
No, I have a great family, first of all. And then my immediate family is such a, you know, they're so protective. It's very difficult. Unless there's a real request or a real need, there's no taking advantage. There's, you know, if a real need, it reaches me.
You know, in your book, you start describing that you're a hustler. I didn't even know what that meant, really, by hustler. But a hustler means a guy who ends up, I don't want to say owning people, but can figure them out, and they gets people to do what they want them to do.
A manipulator. Master manipulator?
Well, that's part of it. That's part of it. You know, hustler's anybody, like, you can be a hustler. A hustler's anybody that gets up every single day and figures out a way to... make good for themselves in this society.
Without
and just for
the
us,
usual...
Yep. No. It has multiple meanings. But for, like, all good. You know, people say all good. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's all bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, my pop died. It's all good, though. You know, you use that word all good in so many different ways. Hustler's another one of those words. Hustler's anybody who has the drive to make something happen for himself. Just so happened for us, being in the street, hustler meant that we had to find a different way because there were no jobs available. You know, the school system was shot.
Right.
You know, so we had to hustle to find a different way to make means for ourselves.
And so, like people might not understand you being a crack dealer, but it seemed like in your neighborhood, this was some kind of hustle.
Well, anything without proper context is you know... You know, I always think of this Denzel movie when he was in the hospital, you know, and he had a gun. He's in a hospital, a black man with a hospital and a gun. But without the context of his son and they putting him on the waiting list, he had a heart disease, he could have died. Without the proper context, you can judge someone totally wrong. So if you given the circumstances that we were in, I'm not saying we were good. Or we made horrible decisions. We're 16 years old, 14 years old. We're going to make bad decisions.
Right. Yeah,
it's
where's
just
your
the
guidance,
decisions
right.
of life and death. So with given those proper context, you can see why a person could make such horrible decisions. I'm not saying to forgive us for a decision, just understand the circumstances and not dismiss us as being just crack dealers.
You say in your book at one point, this was you describing Biggie Smalls. Biggie Smalls as a rapper kind of hit it on the head because he identified that, I think that I got this right, that parents... were scared now of their own children. Like, that was a whole new generation. Your generation, the parents were afraid of their kids. You guys were hustlers, and you were doing things your own way. And it was almost like what Malcolm X said. The chickens are going to come home to roost. If you're not there with your kid, if you're not the father there, don't be surprised by what you get. Don't be surprised when you're scared of your own children, right?
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. So you at that point, you become a crack dealer. Are you a great crack dealer?
Incredible.
You were the best.
So,
well, not the best, but I was really good.
What kind of money is a 14, 15-year-old kid making dealing crack?
For the most part, no money. You could make more money in McDonald's. At the end of the day, if you add up the hours and, you know.
Which in a good pay
scale.
It's
not a good job.
Right.
Not really. You're standing out there all day long.
You stood out there all day long. And you even say you avoided big prison time. You were in a car full of crack. The police had pulled you over, right? And then all of a sudden, they were going to bring in dogs to sniff out your car. But the dogs weren't available for some reason, and they had to let you go.
Yeah, that's the inspiration of 99 Problems, but a bitch ain't one.
Right.
It's you know, we were talking about a canine on that verse. If you listen to the second verse, it all deals with that. And it's even a deeper underlining meaning to that stop, because during that time, the state troopers were pulling people over for being black, driving while black.
Right.
But they were black guys, and, you know, going up to, you know, southern states with a trunk full of trouble.
Right.
So when we stop and when we meet at this point, I'm getting pulled over, but I know I'm getting pulled over for nothing, but I know I'm in the wrong.
Yeah.
So now I'm having a conversation with the cop as if I'm the cleanest guy on Wall Street. And we're having this conversation. It's like this cat and mouse game.
Right.
You know, with a person that's used to getting away with it versus this person who know he's in the wrong, but has these racial undertones. That's why there's this, you know, I was doing 55 into 54. It shows you that I was being pulled over for nothing.
Because
obviously the speed limit is 55.
It is an incredible mind fuck when you realize that you're being pulled over because you're being racially profiled.
Right.
You didn't do anything wrong, but you in fact did do something
but
wrong.
But you know you're wrong.
Right.
I'm so in the wrong, but I'm speaking as if, you know.
Well, you said it in your book, and this really hit home for me. You said being born black is like being born with the presumption of guilt.
Right.
Like you always look guilty of something.
Right.
And man, that made me think, man, that ain't fun. That ain't cool. I mean, everyone thinks I've done something bad here, and I haven't. But meanwhile, you had done something bad.
Well, it makes you do bad things, right?
Right. Sure, because if everyone thinks I'm guilty anyway, why not go out and do something bad?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of weird that way.
Yeah.
Hey, when you... You also describe someone in your book, Russell Simmons, who I didn't understand his importance, but you say he was the first guy to show you that he never had to write a lyric. He never had to write a rap song. He didn't have to write a poem. He didn't have to write a joke.
Didn't even hum a tune.
He didn't even hum a tune. And here's a guy who became a big businessman. He was a tremendous inspiration to you. That's what you wanted to be.
Yeah.
Not just a rapper.
He showed us a different way to be successful.
Yeah.
You know, he showed us that it was a next level. It was a bit more. You know, because for the most part, if you look at it, a lot of us make our money entertaining.
Right.
He's still in entertainment. Oprah Winfrey, what'd she do? She entertains.
Right.
Will Smith, he entertains.
Right.
So we didn't know that there was, you know, at least a touch of an executive level.
When you were the crack dealer, though, and all of a sudden you're writing rhymes, I mean, like you say, some people believe that you could be a big star. Did you really believe that you could take it to where? How many Grammys have you won now? 10?
Yeah, 10. Yeah.
10 Grammys? How many records have you sold?
40, 50 million
records. It's unbelievable, right?
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
I mean, and like you,
was the goal.
Right.
I wanted to have one gold album, and then I wanted to, you know, follow Russell into the executive ranks.
Are you shocked by your own success?
Oh, every day.
I believe you're the world's number one rapper, right? In terms of sales, in terms of
Tupac and Eminem, as far as sales, I'm third on sales, number one with number one album.
Right. And I was watching the Housewives of Beverly Hills. These five white ladies all pulled back with the plastic surgery, and they're going to the Jay-Z concert. I don't even think they knew what the fuck the Jay-Z concert was.
Well, that is the other phenomenon. Yeah. Did you ever believe that all these white kids would be screaming your name?
I think at the end of the day, we're all the same. I really believe that. I mean, we all have the same anxieties, fears, aspirations.
But I'm saying you know that now. But when you were coming up, dreamed.
No, my first album, I knew there was a generation of kids who went through the same thing that I went through that the record companies didn't even understand.
Uh-huh. Regardless of race. In other words, it goes beyond race. It's alienation, really, what you're talking about.
Right.
Right. Being lost.
Right.
And lots of kids relate to being lost.
But on my first album, I was just really trying to talk to my friends.
Mm-hmm.
I was telling our stories, and when they heard them back, it was like someone relates to my pain and my act. Like, my first album had emotions on it. Had Gotta Learn to Live with Regrets was the last album.
Uh-huh.
My mama used to hug me, told me I was the best. Anything in this world, she said, I could possess. Those sort of things. happened for all my friends. Their mothers had to hold them and tell them this thing and give them this self-esteem. So when these guys were hearing these words back, you know, I would go to shows and big guys would have tears in their eyes talking to me, telling me, man, I feel like you looking in my window.
You know what's weird, though? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you say white kids can relate to this because of the message, but the messenger is what they're relating to now. They're getting it from a black guy, which they didn't really get it from before. Like rap, you point out in your book too, that rap, it's the first time you could actually, in your lifetime, see the whole thing develop. Like you saw this whole, you know, it went from like a couple of goofy kind of guys rhyming all the way then into Run DMC. And then you went into like, a, you know, different
Tupac
rap stars.
And
you saw the thing become a real art form and become a way of like the telephone, telling people what's going on in your neighborhood. And then all of a sudden white kids are relating to it. It's got to be mind blowing. And so you start to make money and all that. And that's why I was curious about the art world and Oprah. That's a world you don't come from. When you go into those situations now and you're mixing it up with these wealthy people, do you find there are times you don't know what to do? You don't know the etiquette? You haven't been raised in that environment?
No, because I'm myself in any room I'm in.
You never embarrassed yourself?
No, of course not.
You never walked in and said, oh, everybody thinks I'm ignorant here. I'm stupid.
I don't feel ignorant.
Right.
I don't.
Right.
I felt like I came up in a situation or a time, you know, where I wasn't afforded certain opportunities. And if afforded opportunities, I could be Oprah. I could be Bill Gates. I could be Warren Buffett. I think the thing that separates us two is the opportunity. They were given opportunities. They had access to opportunities.
Absolutely.
That I didn't.
Well, that's why when people aren't for equal opportunity stuff, where some kids from the ghetto get to go to college and all this, it really pisses me off. Affirmative action. I couldn't think of the word. It pisses me off because when I read about the life of Bill Gates, what did Bill Gates have that some poor kid didn't have? He had access to computers as a kid. He had more computer time than anyone, and that's expensive to get. You can't go in and get access to computers at that point in his life when he got access to them. You had to go buy lab time, and it cost a fortune. He had a father who was able to get him into the lab for free, and that's the difference.
Right.
So you need those opportunities.
Absolutely.
And they're hard to get.
And so when you walk into a boardroom with a bunch of guys in suits who all went to college, you're fine.
Yeah, I mean, because they read a bunch of words. I've lived a bunch of life.
Well, that's true. Their law degree doesn't intimidate you, in other words.
It kind of evens us out, whether they know it or not.
Where do you think you get that self-esteem from? Seriously. I mean,
my mom, first and foremost, but then just living life. Like, you know, being in real situations and having to be a person of high integrity and honesty and, you know.
When you go back to the projects, do you run into guys that you knew back then who are even down on their luck now? Do you get self-conscious about your wealth and about your success?
A sort of a survivor's guilt with the world, with where I come from. You know, that's why, I try to stay attached to the culture and everything I do.
How do you stay attached to the culture when all your friends are looking at you with the evil eye?
It's very difficult, but, you know, I know where that comes from. So, you know, I can have a different attitude about it. You know, I don't let my success separate me from who I am.
But how do you stay in touch with the culture? Seriously, where do you go? You can't go to... I saw you at a hotel one time. I didn't bother you. We were staying at the same hotel. You and Beyonce were like... You had 20 security guards around you. I was there with my wife. You know, I'm exaggerating.
Well, they were big. Yeah.
Two big guys. They looked like the size of 12 guys.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to say anything to you.
I'm just really sensitive to that, you know, because I don't want people to think we're traveling with a posse.
Sorry. Yeah. But you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't see how a guy as famous as you...
No, you don't have to be sitting on a bench at Marcy Projects to represent the culture.
Where do you go?
Everywhere I am. Right here. Right now. Me telling our story is representing the culture. I'm pushing our culture forward. I'm bringing a light on the subject again that people would normally talk about because it's going on right now.
With the passage of years, but with the passage of years, don't you think you sort of forget?
Lose touch.
You lose touch. You got to. It's going to happen. You're living a fairy tale life.
Of course. I don't sit on the bench in Marcy Projects. I've lost touch in that way.
Right.
But who I am as a person, you know, I'm still telling these stories as if they happened yesterday.
Right.
I'm still in touch with those emotions and feelings and of who I am as if they were yesterday. you know, the only way I've lost touch in those terms is I don't sit on a bench in Marcy Projects. I have no need to.
I ran into you somewhere, and Rihanna she had really never even been heard of at this point. And you walked up to me and said, "That's my artist." And I was struck by that. I'd never forget those words. "That's my artist." I was like, wow. He owns that woman.
Right.
Like, that's my artist. And you were proud, man. And you were like, wow, this is a discovery of mine. And then she exploded. And then, and, you know, she lit up. How hands-on are you in terms of managing her career?
Well, yeah, we actually manage her now. We didn't manage her in the beginning. I signed her as an artist on Def Jam.
How'd you know? Where do you find a girl like that?
She actually walked into my office. She has a lawyer, Scott Felcher. And he knew Jay Brown, who works with me as well. I mean, today.
Would you say she walked into your office? No one can just walk into your office. She got an appointment. Why? Somebody had scoped her out?
Scott Felcher, her lawyer, knew Jay Brown, who works with me. And they made the introduction. He played him the song, Upon the Replay, which was her first single she had already. And she walked into the office. And, you know, I heard the record, and I was really afraid of the record. It was so big that I thought the record would be bigger than her.
Right.
I thought the record, she would be the Upon the Replay girl.
Forever.
Yeah. So, but I took the meeting anyway. I said, let me just see. Let me just meet her. And
beautiful
when
girl.
I met her that day, I knew she was a star. Like, just her look, the way she walked into a room and her confidence, and she performed in my office.
And she was, what, 17 years old at that
point? She was 16.
16. I know. She looks like a woman at 16, and she has the confidence of it. She's like an old soul in a sense, right?
Absolutely.
So she walks in your office, and what, she just belts out a tune?
Belts out a tune, she performs, and I tell her, there's no way out of this office. I signed her that day.
Wow. Wow. And then when she's your artist, she must be generating a fortune, right?
Yeah, well,
I mean, if you retired tomorrow, you could just run her career and make a ton of dough. Am I correct?
No.
I'm wrong?
No, I have expensive tastes.
Oh, you do. What are the expensive tastes? What are the expensive tastes? I see you had an expensive hotel hanging out in vacation.
There you go.
Right.
That's how it starts.
You don't seem to... whenever I read about you in the paper, you're on a yacht somewhere,
don't ever work.
It looks like you're just having one big party. Yeah, like, you barely work.
Yeah.
So when you say expensive tastes, you got a big home?
No.
Where do you live?
Nice, small, in Tribeca.
Oh, you live in Tribeca?
A little tiny apartment.
You kidding? I didn't know you were from around here. I thought like you moved out to L.A. or something.
No.
You don't have multiple homes somewhere?
No, one little tight apartment. Well, a couple apartments in the city.
I'm a little shocked. Why a tight apartment? Why not have like a nice big place?
It's not really tight.
He's BSing you.
How many square feet is it?
About 12,000.
Yeah. That ain't
it's
a small
a
apartment.
Building.
Yeah.
And then when you go around, you stay at hotels and things. You don't own different properties and things like that. That's not your thing.
No. Nah.
So what's the expensive taste there? Okay, so one nice apartment, maybe a couple apartments. What's the expensive taste? What are you doing?
I'm not doing much.
What do you got? You got a private jet?
No.
So what's the expensive taste? Well, cars?
I was kind of joking.
Oh, you were? Because it seems like you're living a simple life.
Well, not so simple.
You have desires and ambitions. You don't just want to sit on what you've got.
Absolutely.
You want to do things. You want to be that entrepreneur, right?
Yeah, and have that sort of, you know, raise some spoil kids, you know, lead that generation to the next generation and create a whole new dynamic for myself, my friends, their families, you know, just to change that whole generational thing.
How much is that watch you're wearing? What is that, a Rolex?
No, it's just a plain Rolex.
It's just a plain Rolex?
Yeah.
I'm a little shocked.
Yeah.
No, I know. Rolex is an expensive watch.
Yes.
You have spent hours talking to President Obama. You say in your book, if President Obama hadn't won the election, you would have left the country and you would have lived as an expatriate. You would have just said,
where are you going?
Yeah, where are you going? From number one.
Monaco.
Really?
Is Monaco so great? Why Monaco?
Oh, the taxes maybe would have made up for the fact that I miss America.
You would have been really disappointed. Not the idea, I get the feeling, that just because it was a black president, but because George Bush had gone down, the country was a mess, and to go to McCain and your feeling was kind of like more of the same. We need something. We need some difference.
I travel the world, so I watched the feeling towards America change, and I'm sure you've seen the same thing.
Yes.
Like, it used to be a thing, like, you're from America, and it was exciting. And then, you know, it became this thing like Americans, and it's like dumb Americans.
Right.
You know, because how could you elect George Bush two times? Twice.
Right. It was like, man, you Americans are real assholes.
Yeah. Yeah,
we have you to blame.
And then it was like wars going on, and we were trying to impose our will with people. Before, when we had an opinion, people respected it, you know. And even if they didn't necessarily agree with it, they respected our opinion. Now it was like you're butting in our business, and that caused, you know, these sort. And then all these wars was popping up, and it was just getting worse and worse. And I knew what that meant for, you know, our generation.
You said you had several hours of discussion with Obama. Now, this is when he was still senator, right? This is before he ran, or was this while he was running?
Yeah, it was right before he ran, yeah.
How did you end up in the room with him?
His aides, really good friend, Reggie Love, made the contact.
Made the contact and said, the senator wants to meet you?
Mm-hmm.
And when you sit down and you have a couple of hour conversation, I'm the worst at this. If you and I were sitting off the air, we couldn't even talk to each other because you'd be like, what the fuck's with this guy? He can't talk. I'm that way. What do you sit and talk to a senator about? What was the discussion like?
We pretty much talked about normal things. We talked about music. We talked about neighborhoods. We talked about, you know, aspirations. We talked about language and music. We just talked about a bunch of different.
Why did he make you comfortable, or were you?
It's a very comforting soul. Yeah. I mean, immediately you sit down, you know, you realize you know,
as
again, I come in as myself, but he sat down as himself.
As a hustler, though, do you sit and analyze, like, what does he want from me? Why is he having this meeting? Why did he seek me out? Did you understand why he sought you out?
I asked those questions before I met him. Yeah, then when we sat down, I just realized he was just a genuine soul and had a genuine curiosity.
Do you think he wanted your endorsement in the sense that he was about to run for president and he said,
looking for the youth vote.
I'm looking for the youth vote. I'm looking for grassroots. I want to make this guy aware. Jay-Z's an important guy.
Yeah, I think, you know, as a community organizer, I think that's, you know, that's pretty much normal for him to be in contact with the community.
Have you been invited to the White House since?
Yeah, I've been there, yeah.
A couple of times?
Yeah.
What
no
do
kidding.
You think about the charge that he's arrogant? A lot of people report that.
I don't know why they say that.
Yeah, I mean, especially you hear it on Fox.
Not arrogant. He's actually the opposite of arrogant. He's a very humble, open, welcoming person.
Yeah?
Not humble at all.
So when
not arrogant at all.
So when you go to the White House now, is it? I think you've described it as a kind of a
did
spine tingling,
anything?
That kind of thing. Yeah. Do you take anything from there? That's a good question. I would take a few things. Why not? But
they watch me when I go there. I don't know if
you know
if that still goes on.
Did Obama accuse you of taking anything?
Yeah,
right. Who knows?
Michelle's like, that Jay-Z.
Yeah, who knows? You know, you also say in your book, there's a couple of things I want to ask you about, but you also say in your book you were very inspired by the fashion and the whole attitude of the Black Panther Party. I know what you mean. There's a cool look to that whole thing. It's all black. It's berets.
It's military.
Right? It's military. It's kind of a cool imagery, right?
Yeah.
And so you incorporated a lot of that into your style and into the things you wanted. But it's not. It's part of everything. It's part of the movement, right? It's part of the culture.
Absolutely, yeah. It's for the first time, it was an organized front to protect us. You know, the police, we were fighting police. You know, the people that was, it's very difficult to have the people who hate you or people that don't understand you protect your community.
Right.
There's always going to be angst and there's always going to be fights, you know, because secretly, if I'm a racist and I'm in power, that relationship is never going to go good.
So when you decide to use Alicia Keys as the female voice on one of your songs, how do you make that decision which woman's going to get it? Whatever woman gets that part is going to probably have a hit record with you, I mean, at this point. Why do you use her? Why not use your wife? Why not use Rihanna? Because she is your artist and, you know, she's yours in a sense. How do you make that decision which woman gets to sing?
I think the idea of making music is not based on relationships. I mean, if someone is talented enough and you could put them in that role and you know just happen to be your artist, then that's great. But I think the record should come first. The song, because it's not really yours, it's for the people.
Right.
And I just thought Alicia Keys fit Empire State of Mind better than anyone. It was between her and Mary J. Blige. I was going to use Mary as well. But there was the added piano stabs, a ding, 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 that if Alicia would play that at the piano while singing, I thought it would be bring more life to the song. And that's why I chose her.
Do you ever wish you could sing in the classical sense instead of rap? Like that you wouldn't, that you could be the singing voice as well as the...
No, I respect singers, but I love poetry. And rap is the words in rap. Like you can make a melody, which is genius in itself, and repeat it. You know,
and make it musical.
There's 8-bar choruses in songs. There's 16-bar choruses. I mean, 16-bar verses in each and every rap song.
How do you, sometimes
24. You know.
But how do you understand music? You didn't have any music lessons growing up, did you?
No.
I mean, aside from listening to the music all over and over and over again, you never got any training. No one ever gave you a piano lesson, a guitar lesson. Did you ever say to your mother, "Hey, can you get me some lessons or something like that? I feel musical inside."
Well, she got me the tools that I needed for, you know, my...
What tools?
A notebook.
Yeah.
A boombox. You know, those were the tools that I needed for my training.
No regrets like, "Oh, I wish somebody would have taught me the guitar when I was a kid"?
No. No. Sometimes I think about playing the instrument, but yeah. But musical, for the most part, no.
But wouldn't it help you when you're in a studio if you could talk to musicians and say, "Hey, I want a high C here. I want this musical note," or if you could read charts?
Yeah, I can say it, but it's not, you know, it's not technical. Like I said, it's the same thing as sitting in the boardroom with a bunch of people that's been to high school. I have on-the-job training.
So
I have a PhD in making incredible music.
So you hear...
So I can say, dum, dum, dum. Yeah,
is
I don't
that
know
how
what
you
note,
say it?
I don't know what the note that is, but I know that's a note, and
somebody will know.
They
in the
should
room.
Know. Yeah.
So you
and
say, so you say,
I
to
say
Alicia,
no, coke down.
You say to Alicia Keys, "Give me." I hear dun dun dun, and that's how you have to communicate with her.
Yeah,
it's a shame in a sense.
No, it actually isn't.
You don't think
so? The song is the biggest record of last year.
Well, you heard that song in your head. How did you hear it? Did you hear the music first and then the poetry?
No, the music came. The music. A good friend of mine and publisher's name is Big John, John Platt.
Right.
You know, he sent the song to me, and it was an entire song. I just had to break it up. I took all the verses off, you know, left the chorus, added 3 verses, and then added Alicia Keys.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty amazing. Yeah, it's great that you do it. I just think that it's a shame in a way. You didn't get the formal training. When you're a kid growing up in the...
basically in the same position as Ford, the guy who created automation. He said he didn't understand anything, but he knew a lot of people who did.
Jesse, when you're a kid growing up... and you're,
absolutely.
Jesse, when you're growing up in a neighborhood full of crack dealers and you're the kid who's being sensitive writing poetry, do guys try to beat you up and take you on in a fight?
Well, not beat me up, but yeah... I had a song on my first album. That's a great question. I had a song on my first album called "Can't Knock the Hustle."
Right.
And, you know, it sound, when you hear the word hustle, you think I'm saying you can't knock my hustle. But I was actually talking to the hustlers because I wanted to be a rapper. And the hustlers looked at the rappers. At that time, hustlers made way more money than rappers.
Right.
You know.
Sure.
No one had gotten a big check like, you know, Puff or got from Arista and
right.
Russell at that time.
Right.
So we were pulling up in Lexuses and Benzes, and they were jumping out with turtle tops, like 40 of them
right.
tight, and we were laughing.
Right.
So it was like, you know, these guys make all the music and they all over the world and they miss their son's first steps, you know, traveling the world and they just get taken advantage of. They don't get any money. Why do you want to do that?
Right.
And I would just blow it off like, let me just try it.
Right.
So I wrote "Can't Knock the Hustle" to the hustlers saying, because rap was my job and... I mean, hustling was my job and rap was my hustle.
Yeah, because I could see where kids would go.
So I wrote the song actually opposite.
I could see people go, "Oh, look at this pussy. He's writing poems and shit and, you know."
Not actually. It wasn't because it was our stories. It was more, they were more entertained by it.
So yeah, and were people jealous of you at a young age that you had that ability? I imagine people want to just ridicule it because they're jealous in a sense.
No, I think it was more so I didn't face that until I got successful. Jealousy. I faced more you know, almost like a poet on a street corner. Everyone's like, I got more attention. Everyone would crowd around because they wanted to hear their stories.
I watched you on 60 Minutes because I don't know if they were doing a piece on Beyonce or they were doing a piece on you. I forget who was actually the focus of the piece, but it was still this sort of notion that you don't ask Jay-Z about being married. You don't even acknowledge that you're married and all this. Or we pass that. Like, you acknowledge you're married now.
Well, everyone knows I'm married. I just don't discuss it because it's a part of my life that I'd rather keep private. Well,
it keeps
at
it
least,
sacred.
Yeah. Well, you need part of that. When your whole life is played out in front of everybody, you need, for your sanity, you need parts that are just yours.
Are you two expecting a child?
No. No, because they put that in the paper like every week, every slow news day, and everyone goes for it.
Why is that so important?
I don't know, but that's what I hear reported all the time.
I really sit back and wonder, like, when people are going to stop, like...
Wondering about that.
You know, if that... You know, the day that happens, I don't think Newsday would know before my grandmother.
Yeah, right? Hey, by the way, what happened to Lauryn Hill? I got all these questions for you. Lauryn Hill, to me, is like one of the greatest voices ever. What happened to her?
Absolutely.
Is she gone? Like, did she crack up or something? Like, I just feel like she just wigged out and she's nowhere to be found.
I think that was another thing. I used the great Lauryn Hill as an example last week as you know, us being able to control our art was amazing.
Right.
You know, because that relationship between Lauryn and her record company forced her not to deliver great music all over the years.
Is that what happened? Oh, yeah. So she got frustrated with the business.
You can hear on a song like Zion when he's saying Lauryn, baby, when she was pregnant, I'm guessing, and they wanted to have an abortion.
Oh.
And she's saying, they're saying, Lauryn, baby, use your head. But instead, I chose to use my heart. Like, you can hear what's about to come. Like, the people had opinions, like, they can tell her whether she should have a child or not. You know, when you have those strong opinions over someone,
it's crazy.
That's going to crack.
So you don't do that with Rihanna. In other words, that's why working for you is a lot nicer, because you understand it from an artist's perspective.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Baba Booey, what is it?
He has to go.
You have to go.
Yeah. We can't get to talk about Kanye and the whole thing where he runs up on stage with when Taylor Swift and
I would love to talk about that.
Yeah,
I got a couple more. Moments.
And I like that song. Let's hear it for the scumbags. Let's hear it for the douchebags. I love that song.
I figured you would like that song.
I love that. I said any guy who could put scumbag and douchebag in a song has got to be the greatest.
But what does that mean to you, business wise, when you know Kanye is coming up and taking a girl's spot at the award show and screaming that Beyonce should be getting this award?
It's bittersweet in a weird way.
Yeah.
It's bittersweet in a lot of ways, because I think when we look back, everyone would agree that he was right. It was bad timing, because it's not her fault.
Right.
It's not Taylor Swift's fault. Like, she didn't nominate. She didn't elect herself.
What did she do wrong?
She just sat there and she had a dream, and she see that dream being realized, and he had the same dream. So he realizes that now.
Uh-huh.
But he was fighting for the integrity of the award and the integrity, and he knows how hard he works,
right?
You know, on his videos. So he, you know, it was bad timing, but we agreed. Even when he said the thing about Bush on NBC or whatever,
he's in trouble again, it was
bad timing, but it was absolutely an honest emotion. We all felt like that. We didn't feel like Katrina was a natural disaster. We felt like it was an attack on black people.
Mm-hmm.
All you saw was black people on the roof with help signs, and you know, and it was like, man, I mean, white people felt like that.
Everybody felt like
it
was a botched. America didn't come quick enough to rescue people.
Yeah.
Do you take your own toilet with you everywhere you tour? Is that true?
Take my toilet?
Take your own toilet. You don't want to use the toilets.
Or a seat? Something?
I love that. No, you don't do that?
No.
I would do that if I was on tour. Do you still like touring?
I love touring.
Was the Eminem
more than ever.
With you and Eminem, was that... I don't feel like you're out all the time, though. You do it in moderation. You don't grab every dollar out there.
No.
Is that the philosophy? Because you could burn out on the road.
But why always announce your retirement? I think everything should be great.
Yeah. I did that twice. Come on.
That's like the Who.
It's been 5 years ago.
Jay-Z, you're not going anywhere. Yeah, you're not retiring. Right.
Knock it off, okay? Don't bring that up. No comment.
But you were sincere when you said you were retiring,
yeah,
right?
I was offered the presidency of Def Jam. And I'm watching Russell's, it all makes sense with context, right?
I'm
watching Russell, so I figured it was my time to affect someone the way he affected me. I thought that was, you know, I start using my own therapy. Maybe I should go.
Right.
And I was misguided, because I didn't realize the love for music would have a stronger pull on me.
As an artist, though, Well, let me get this plug in first. I don't want to forget because if I'm running out of time. Your book is called Decoded. I recommend it. It's not only a beautiful looking book, beautiful artwork in there, but it's great stuff. Great work. Helped me to understand a lot of stuff. And that hits stores tomorrow. It's called Decoded. Jay-Z will be signing copies of his book this Wednesday at 1 p.m. at Barnes & Noble on Fifth Avenue.
Wow.
And 46th Street in Manhattan as well. So you can go over and say hello. You'll sign all the books?
Yeah, of course.
Will you sit there? Let's say 10 million people show up. Are you going to sit there and just keep signing away? You'll satisfy all the people?
I think it's physically impossible to sign 10 million, but I'll try to get close.
I think you could do it.
Yeah.
and are you... I feel your dream is to be a billionaire. I do. I feel... Oh, I know what I had to ask you. Quickly, about the Nets. So they had contacted me at some point. Try and get LeBron here. Be part of
That's
a committee.
The Knicks.
What?
The Knicks.
No, I'm talking about the Nets, right?
Trying to get LeBron?
Yeah, weren't you trying to get LeBron too?
Every team.
Yeah, right.
Every
team
that
I'm talking about the Nets.
I didn't know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, of course, everybody wants LeBron. So I was part of this thing, trying to get LeBron to the Knicks. And I said, I'm not going to beg some. This guy knows what he's doing. That's insulting. I'm going to go somewhere and beg him to. What? He doesn't know what he's doing? Did you make the major play for him?
Well, he's a friend of mine.
Right.
Yeah, we had the conversation, but.
What do you say to him to get him enticed?
It's a different conversation for me and him because, again, we have a relationship. So. For me, it was just present the opportunity and then let him make his decision.
Right. You weren't angry with him, though, were you?
No, of course not.
Are you making any money with the Nets? I mean, can you make a lot of money being an owner in the Nets? It's got to be profitable, right?
No, it's not really profitable.
It's just an ego thing? Like, kind of like, let me put it out there?
Yeah, NBA teams are like paintings for billionaires.
Mm-hmm. They don't make money, those teams?
No. The Lakers, the Knicks, they're very few teams. Well, not the Knicks.
Not even
There's
the Knicks.
There's a couple teams that, well, Knicks maybe make money. I think, you know, that place is always packed. You know.
Could you ever imagine at 9 years old if I said to you, one day you will grow up and own a piece of the Nets, you know, own a team?
No, the dream is hard enough to be a basketball player.
Yeah, right, exactly.
It's very difficult.
To own the team would be insane.
Yeah.
But by the same token, now that you see how LeBron and those guys are playing in Miami, aren't you glad?
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah. Well, let me
tell
you.
They're not having such a great time.
I could talk to you all day about this stuff. I'm very into the book. I think it's terrific.
Thank you, man.
It's very beautiful. And beautiful artwork. You're truly an artist. Jay-Z's book, Decoded, hits stores tomorrow. Go over and say hi to him. He's signing copies of the book this Wednesday at 1 p.m. at Barnes & Noble on 5th Avenue and 46th Street in Manhattan. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you, man.
It was great talking
to you.
Good to
see you again.
Great conversation with you guys.
A lot of fun. And get yourself into therapy. I'm telling you right now, you got issues, my friend. We all do. All right, the great Jay-Z, everybody, and we'll be back right after these words. Thanks, Jay-Z.
Thank you. All right.